7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friends, to episode 232 of Color Magic, your magic and gaming podcast, where we talk about all types of issues that affect gamers at and away from their gaming tables and computers. I am your host, Power Dragon, and for 232 episodes, got my main man, who we missed last weekend at the Hunter Burton, Brian Sonic. How's it going, man?
Yep, we had a couple of more hospital appointments, so we didn't get to do man, the Hunter Burton.
Y'all must be getting to know your doctors way too well. Y'all got to stay out of the hospital, dude.
Believe me, we'd like to.
Yeah, also, it was crazy. The weather was pretty rough the first couple of days we got down there. Like, it was raining. I heard, like, Denton got some hail or something. So, like, it was pretty messed up down there for a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, also, okay, so fun story. I'm getting off the plane on Thursday, and I see these messages of, like, hey, do you see what happened in Texas today, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what went down, right? Because I'm thinking, my first thought is, badly, I went to, like, there must have been another shooting, right? And people are just trying to warn me because I'm going to be down in Texas. Where, you know, I mean, it's sad, but that's where my head went.
Yeah, I get it.
So I pop open the news. Turns out, nah, y'all just can't go to Pornhub no more.
Which is not something they need to worry you about getting off the plane, I don't think.
Oh, I know. I think people just thought it was funny and were just asking if I'd seen it. But I was just like, man, Texas just being Texas. That's all that is. I don't miss it.
Is it just Pornhub, or is it because...
Yeah, it's literally just Pornhub. Like, okay.
So then it's not even a big deal, I guess.
My understanding is they tried to pass a thing that was going to... require, like, a dumb amount of verification to where they wanted them to, like, take... You'd have to send them a picture of your driver's license and all this other stuff. And they were just like, look, that's too invasive. That's too much record keeping. We are not going to do that. Great. Like, that's way more than any other site has to do. Like... Yeah. It's easier for us to just go ahead and just shut off IPs to Texas, and then it is what it is. And truthfully, side note, just knowing that how Texas operates, I almost guarantee you if they did follow up, they'd be gunning for a way to get them to screw up. And the minute there was any type of information violation, then there's just going to be a big lawsuit.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So it's like, don't even put yourself in that position.
But yeah, that's what it'll take to get people to vote some of these idiots out of office. You know, just losing access to Pornhub because... Losing access to things like health care and basic human rights doesn't seem to do it. Maybe this will get people to realize, hey, we got some idiots in charge.
Maybe. It was such a weird thing, though. Like, just out of the blue. I was just like, okay, you know, that's a thing. But before we get into everything, want to remind everybody, we are still looking for a sponsor. While we are talking to some people, we would pick up a couple. So if you're interested in promoting something or you know a company that's looking to get a little bit of reach, have them hit us up. We're available on our DMs. I'm available everywhere. Send me a message. We want to do some business with you. But in the meantime, if you want to support us and help us stay around, you can check us out over at patreon.com/colormagic. And you can always pick up some stuff over at colormtg.com/shop. Okay, so let's get into this lead story thing, because this got me thinking over the weekend. Like, I've attended several events already this year. And at every one of them, there is a very consistent thing. There are a lot, and I mean a lot, of new faces. Like, people coming to events for the first time, people that have just started playing in the last couple of months, people that have gotten interested because of some new product, people that, you know, learned the game from a friend, a cousin, significant other, whatever, because they'd seen them playing it for a while. Something's working. You know, for as much as we sit here and say, we don't like some of the new direction, we don't like there being X amount of products out or whatever, which I get, because I'm old school. I remember the days where it'd be three or four sets a year, and then maybe one special set, like a Commander set or, you know, From the Vault or something like that. Like, so I get it. This feels kind of crazy. But then I started thinking about it, right? Like, what if for the new folks, this doesn't feel any different, right? They don't, because if you started playing in the last three or four years, you don't know about the before times until you hear one of us old heads gripe about it, right? Like, but for you, there's always been a new product every other month, right? There's been events that are designed this way and conventions doing Magic the way they do it or whatever. And the RCQs, and there aren't PTQs or whatever, right? Arena's always existed since they've played or whatever. it's just a different world for them. So they don't know the difference. They're just happy when like Lord of the Rings comes out and they get to buy their favorite Lord of the Rings stuff. Or recently they're into Fallout and there were people there that were excited to have Fallout things, you know, this past weekend. And it's crazy because like I said, I think about the fact of, you know, they made $1.5 billion last year. Granted, they'll probably make 1.2 or so this year because, you know, whatever, we've talked about that previously, but still $1 billion. And you're selling out, not just selling out the tickets for them, you're selling out almost all the events at the conventions they're running. You know, right? Like, so everything, near complete sellouts. You still have all these other events going off. You have all these RCQs happening. You have all these new faces at events. Something's working. You know, they're not killing the game the way we, like, the things we like are no longer the same. Or I say we being the old guard, right? Just, yeah. You know, like the PTQ system and the Pro Tour system and not what it used to be or what we got used to. We don't have Grand Prix anymore. We have Magic Cons and Command Fest or whatever are the big gatherings for Magic, right? We don't have just the 3 or 4 sets a year. We have the 4 standard sets and like 3, 4 other sets that come out every year, right? That's just the way it is now. Do we have to engage with all of it? No. There were people that showed up this weekend that literally just played all the legacy events or played just the modern events or just the standard events. And that's okay. Like, Magic is big enough now that we can all play Magic the way we want to and not engage with the other formats at all. Like, so there's people who play that don't even know anything about the other formats. And that's cool, too. There's people that just play Commander that will never play a 60-card form of Magic. Totally fine. Right, you can have all those exist at the same time and everybody be okay. But I don't know, Brian, have you seen other people like reaching out to you or asking about Magic or seen new faces where you didn't expect to see them previously? Because I feel like even when I go to my local store, you know, even the difference from a year ago, there's new faces in there. Half the faces practically are new.
I mean, I haven't been able to really get out enough to see whether the faces are new or not, honestly. We've been too busy going to hospitals, unfortunately.
That's true. You've had home issues, so that's totally fair. It is something, though, that, you know, when I've discussed with other creators and other people that have been traveling to events, even some of the vendors, they said, yeah, you know, you kind of got used to seeing probably about 50% or 80%. If you'd done a tournament in an area before or at a convention, you kind of knew all the regulars that were going to be coming up. But said over time, you know, now that number's down to 50% or less. I know for me, you know, even doing the Hunter Burton, where this was like my 7th year, I think, participating with him, I maybe knew 20% of the room. You know, now maybe some of that is turnover from some of the old guard leaving and not playing anymore. Some of it's just so many new people coming in. But it's been interesting because you're talking about people that just, they don't even know how things work. They didn't. Some of them didn't know they could have pre-registered or whatever because they didn't never heard of that being an option. You know, like the story I told about the guys I met in Chicago. They didn't know anybody or anything. There were two dudes who just started playing for 6 or 8 weeks, decided they were going to drive cross-country. They bought the VIP. They did the whole thing. You know, like, they just did up the weekend. And it's like, all right, cool. You know, and they were literally going to creators and asking them what it is they did or who they were. And they were looking up stuff in real time and just following people because they didn't know anything about anything.
And it's like, you know, I think this is kind of the way it's always been. These people will play for 4 or 5 years. And in 4 or 5 years, they'll be like us old heads where they'll hate everything. And they'll either move on to a different format or a different game, or, you know, or they'll just start their own YouTube channel or podcast to be complaining about the way things work. You just, everybody's gonna, I think that's just, it's the cycle of, you know, you find a new thing, you love a new thing, then after a few years, you hate a new thing, and you either move on or you continue complaining about how much you miss the way the old days were.
I mean, you're not wrong, you know, because I don't know how many other listeners or viewers have had a bunch of other hobbies, but I know the two of us have.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I've done so much stuff from learning about stage magic to playing disc golf to playing a pile of other games to you name it. And even in each of those communities, I've kind of around for a while. Things became, I don't know what I'd call it, like less interesting, unfun, whatever. In some cases, they just died or went away, you know, right? Yeah, and they just move on to the next thing. And that's kind of just the cycle, right? You don't even really think much about it. I think the only difference is
the concern now is maybe that, like, are we, because, you know, for years we felt like Magic has just been too big to fail, too big to kill, and to some extent, I feel like if any game is, Magic probably is, but now I'm concerned where, like, you know, the saying that was attributed to Abraham Lincoln, where if America falls, it won't be from the outside, it'll be from the inside. That's the same way I feel about Magic at this point. If something happens that kills Magic, the call will come from inside the house. It'll be something stupid that Hasbro did that kills it, not anything that came from outside Magic.
Oh, I've said that at least for the last 8 or 10 years, that if something were to kill Magic, it's almost going to be just them deciding that's the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Even more so. Because, like, in a real world, let's say disaster happens for Magic, it's still probably going to make like $600 million for the year. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's still going to be a $500 or $600 million product, even if things go badly. And what people don't realize is that's still way more than most other game companies make in a year. Like, more than probably 95% of the other game companies make in a year. So
the frightening part is, even after that, they still had to lay off hundreds of people.
So yeah.
You're going to get to it. If you can't afford to keep people around after record profits, like, when can you afford to keep new people around?
And sadly, I still argue that that was just the unfortunate part of how business is done too often, where, well, every branch has to share in the pain, right? Even though the successful arm of the company shouldn't have to let anybody go.
Exactly. There's nobody over there printing Trouble or Hungry Hungry Hippos. You can't. I know you let some of those folks go, but yeah, you wouldn't think. It's just a bizarre, backwards way of doing things.
Dude, I'm with you. I've seen that happen at other companies where it's like, oh, well, we had this shortfall or whatever, so all the divisions have to share in this negative situation. It's like, but no, you have some divisions that were overperforming because the other three or four underperformed, like, they shouldn't get punished just the same, right? Like, that part sucks. But yeah, it's interesting. You know, I'm with you. I think if it ends, I don't even know when it would end at this point, because worst case scenario, it would hit a number low enough that some other company would still want a multi-$100 million product in their portfolio.
Problem being, like, if they don't have, you know, Hasbro's coffers to pull from, they may buy it and have no idea what they're doing and then just run it completely into the ground. And then at that point, nobody else may want it.
Sort of. But somebody would try it. Like, we've seen way worse companies get bought and die. Hell, Hasbro's bought companies and sold them and had them die or whatever. So people with big pockets, if they can get a big license under them and they think there's an opportunity, even for just a marketing or branding opportunity to try to do something with licensing or whatever, they would take a shot at it if they think the money's there. But yeah, at this rate, I don't know. I mean, there's enough new faces that if a bunch of us old heads just quit buying cards at this point,
right,
they'd still be making a pile of money. Like,
that's exactly how a con game should work. You can't shell game the same person, you know, multiple times. You got to go out, you got to find new people. And what's great about the gaming industry is that so far, there has been just a constant supply of new people for Magic, Madden, Call of Duty, Yu-Gi-Oh, etc., etc. So even when they screw up, and they often do, they're still, because, you know, some people just, at the end of the day, you like to, I mean, I got here because all the other games I played died. So it's just,
sometimes, I mean, that's facts, though,
that hopefully will still exist in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it's tough, man. And you're right. You just have to keep getting new people. And this is going to be a hard thing for people to hear, but literally every product on the planet has to have that mentality, including Magic and D&D and Pokemon and whatever else you follow, right? That it's just got to be that way. Hell, I mean, I played Madden every year up until probably right before COVID. So it was like 2018, 2019. And then I kind of like played a little bit of 2018, played a little bit of 2019, and then I sort of fell off. But Madden kept making a lot of money, right? Even though dudes like me don't play anymore. Even though I played the first, God, whatever that was, damn near 20 years of Madden or whatever, right? Like, it just didn't matter, right? There were still going to be new faces, and I was totally replaceable. And it's sad. I think because magic has almost become a part of people's identity because it's been around so long. And a bunch of us have made videos and traveled with people to events. And, you know, we've written articles about it. And we've got done alternate art. And we have our favorite colors. And we've bought clothing and merchandise and whatever. It's such a big part of our identity that you don't want to hear that you're replaceable. But I'm telling you, looking around, we're all replaceable. I mean, like, myself included, me and Brian included, like, we could be usurped at any time. I mean, like, that's real, right? But I don't think that's a negative thing. What it does mean, though, is that they're doing a good enough job that there are definitely going to be new faces coming around, new people supporting your local game stores, people buying artwork from the artist. I mean, hell, everybody I talked about it that's been in Chicago has mentioned it. Like, the artists, some of them had record lines, which has never happened. Like, one of the artists, and I'm not going to put them on blast because I don't want anybody to feel bad, but literally, we asked them how they were doing, and they were like, I had a line! You know, like, so, like, artists that don't even get lines had lines. Like, which is crazy, right? So, it's a good thing for a lot of people. It's just going to feel like a bad thing when the things we like or the way we enjoyed things are no longer the best way for them to do business. And that's tough. It sucks. Because, you know, I'm on that boat on some of those things with people. But it's, I mean, looking around, like I said, $1.5 billion they made last year. All these new faces coming in, you know, some selling record, a beyond blowing out of the water the previous record on a set with like Lord of the Rings or whatever. Like, these things work. We may not like it, but they work. And that's just something we're going to have to come to accept over time, sadly. But anyway, let's hop into the soapbox. There's a couple of things. And I have to say, this one this week, I don't even know how to approach, like, okay, I'm just going to say some of y'all are part of the problem. And we have some pretty nice listeners. Several of y'all have come up to me. I'll even say last week, people came up and said, I thought you said Brian might be here. I'm like, I know, but, you know, things happen, whatever. So, like, people are friendly, loyal, whatever. I appreciate y'all. I really do. So don't take this as me taking a shot at you. But there are a few of you that I'm going to use last week's episode as a prime example, where we talked about a thing specifically because I knew people were going to see the headline of Chris Cox, Hasbro CEO, says AI coming to MTG and D&D, right? But that's not really what he said, but it makes a good headline. And we even said that in the show. We knew people would be into it because of the headline, and that was going to be. And sure enough, I saw stuff all up and down Twitter. But we said specifically, let's break down that interview and talk about the way he mentioned it's going to be used, because it's not immediately what people are going to jump to, right? Because everybody's going, oh, they're going to be putting artwork in, and they're going to replace all the writers. And like, he even said in that interview that he knows they have a responsibility for the human side, particularly of Magic and D&D, because they already know what that culture is and everything else, and they don't want to disrupt that. Plus, those are their cash cows. It would be dumb, right? But even with us doing that and explaining how they plan to use it and everything else, people immediately jumped to the comments. And they said, oh, well, the minute they start putting AI in Magic, I'm quitting. If they try to put AI artwork in D&D, blah, 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 right? And I was like, did you not even listen to the episode? Like, that's literally the reason we even talked about it, so we can explain it. And so it's like, the thing we particularly knew was going to happen, that we called out was going to happen, you did the exact thing. And I see it on so many platforms. I see it a lot on Instagram. I see it on Twitter. I see it on TikTok. I see it on Facebook. People will just see, read a line, and then immediately go to the comments. And a lot of times they have a video. Now, don't be wrong. We had a full 50-minute video. Probably don't want to watch the whole thing. I understand. Fair enough. But there's a lot of times those videos are under 2 minutes. A bunch of them are 30 seconds. And people still don't watch them. They just rush to the comments because their opinion has to be heard. They got to tell you how much they hate something or whatever. And half the comments responding to them are just like, did you even watch the thing? Did you even read what they posted? You know, whatever. And that said, some of the people went back on last week's episode and several of them deleted some comments. Good on you. I'm at least respect that. You realize you messed up. And I tried to respond politely, just like, hey, did you even bother watching? Like, or hey, this is exactly what we were talking about in relation to the topic. And I'm assuming they went back, listened to part of it, or at least the part that they were responding to, and then went, okay, cool, I see what you're talking about, no problem. But I would venture to guess a lot of folks that do that also are the ones that like to complain about people on the other side of issues they don't agree with doing a similar thing. And it's like, don't be the problem. Be better, right? Don't be part of the solution, not the issue. If you're just jumping into the complaints or whatever before even seeing the content, you're just doing the same thing. Hell, at least skim it. You know what I mean? Like, give it a quick once over if it's written. Maybe listen to the first 4 or 5 minutes or something or whatever. So you at least if you get into a discussion of the comments, you can defend your side. You know what I mean? Like, give yourself some ammo. It benefits you, if nothing else, to at least take that into consideration. If nothing else, I would even say it's a little bit rude if those are people that you follow or support or whatever or listen to on a regular basis to at least not consume a portion of it before giving a rebuttal. They're taking the time to put the effort into the project, edit it, get it all figured out, share it on socials, do all that stuff. And then instead of consuming any of it, it was more important for you to just put your 2 cents in before even knowing what they said. Right? Like, that's kind of, it is a little bit rude, to be honest. Like, so let's try to be better than that. Let's not just race to comments. Even if you weren't one of those people, like, make it a habit to at least make sure you know what they're talking about first. Hell, bunch of them link an article or a graph or whatever to the thing they're talking about. At least take a couple seconds to consume it and then give your feedback. Because you might be surprised how often you're not really responding to the thing you're responding to. Hell, there's been multiple times I've read somebody's header and then after consuming the thing they posted, I reread what they originally posted and I went, oh, okay, I get it. You can misinterpret that if you don't know what they're saying in their actual thing. So it's just like, okay, cool. Glad I took a couple minutes to take that in, or else I might have started an argument with somebody and we'd have been on the same page anyway. You know what I mean? So let's be better. I don't know how often you see it, Brian, but that's something I see a lot. Seriously.
Oh, yeah. People, like I said, they want to, the most important thing to them is to get their 2 cents in.
Yeah, right. I think
you can see kind of, you know, you can see average watch time on the video, so you know exactly how long people paid attention before they started attacking.
Oh, bruh, I have times I've posted something and seen somebody leave the comment in 2 minutes, and I'm like, that's a 40-minute video. There ain't no way, like, there's no possible world where you could have even watched enough in the first 2 minutes to have that opinion about the video. Like, there's no way, right? And then you call them on it and they get mad. And it's like, man, we gotta be better than that. Seriously. We can do so much better. But all right, I'm gonna give you some time.
All right, after a couple of kind of blah weeks from PlayStation Plus, people seem like they really like the March offerings. So we got a good mix. We got EA Sports F1 23, if you like racing type stuff. We have Sifu, which is kind of a roguelike beat 'em up, but I guess the catch is each time you die, your character, you come back, but you're, you know, about 5 or 10 years older than you were the last time you did a run. So by the end, you're the stereotypical wise old kung fu master trying to go through these stages, and of course, you know, with the comparable reflexes and things. Yeah, that's a fun one. That's one I own. But yeah, if you hadn't played it, I definitely recommend it. If you like roguelikes, that is a absolute fun. If you have any love for, like, you know, those martial arts movies, John Woo style action movies, you will absolutely love that one. Hello Neighbor 2, I think at this point we've at least seen Hello Neighbor, at least heard of it, if you hadn't played it, it's not your type of game. So yeah, that one is now free to play on PlayStation Plus. Destiny 2, The Witch Queen, again, that's another one where I'm sure even if you don't play that style of game, you have probably heard a bunch about it. If you've ever wanted to try it, now is the perfect time to jump into that one. So yeah, and you know, we talk about how, like, you know, why are you complaining about free games? But thing is, you know, everybody, Xbox gives you 4 or 5 free, well, Taylor Board 4 or 5, if you get Game Pass, you're having like probably 100+ games to choose from that are free. And then, of course, there's a bunch of games that are free to play by default, like, you know, Fortnite, for example. And Fortnite has, you know, obviously the main game with the building and the shooting. They got a racing game in there now. Disney has just bought in and will do something incredible, I'm sure. They got a Lego Fortnite now, some people call it Minecraft, only even better than actual Minecraft. So, yeah, you really are competing against a million different things. So, yes, people do complain about free games if it's, you know, Barbie's horse race or insert other trash software here.
Actually, let me ask you, because I wouldn't know this answer, but like, what would you say are like the worst? Or I mean, okay, since people didn't like, say, like last month's offering, just for perspective, what's like the best thing that was available that people didn't enjoy?
Oh God, let me go back to, I guess, February PlayStation Plus.
Because I'm always curious, right? Because I haven't had much time for video games because I'm so busy doing all these other crazy content things. But it's got me wondering, because I feel so simplistic when I play games. Like, I'm so easily entertained. Like, I can find the simplest, like, puzzle game or whatever, and I'm just like, cool, I'm good with this for a little bit. But other people just be like, ah, there was nothing available last night. Like, there's such trash or whatever. And, like, you know, it's like, wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to find one of the ones where people really just hated the offerings.
But it's such an interesting thing that, you know, people can be that bent out of shape for something that is free. Now, don't get me wrong, I guess it's not, especially if you have, like, the Game Pass or whatever, it's not, like, free.
Yeah, you are totally paying for it, but...
Yeah, you still paid some amount of money monthly to have access to a pile of things, but it's also, like...
one from September 2023. It seemed like people really hated, and I'm trying to find where it actually the headlines is latest free games are final nail. It also didn't help that I think they raised the price right before they had these games.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Well, then that probably hurts too. That changes perspective on top of it, right? Because now people are spending extra for the month. And then you didn't have the best titles. That's going to, even though it may not be that much different than a normal month, it's going to feel worse.
And that site's tried to take me over with the ads and notifications.
That's all right. It was more just like a random question out of curiosity, because I had no idea. You know, it's always tough when you talk about those kind of monthly pay, whatever things, you know, subscription models of how much value has to be offered every month to be worth it to people, right? Because it's always a question of, if it's offering a decent value over the course of a year, is that still fine, right? Or are there people that expect, well, every month I need to be getting something or it's not worth it? So,
well, yeah, I think, because again, you are technically paying for this, so you want something that's actually worth the download for you. Like, one of the ones that just dropped recently is Foam Star, which is kind of... It's very similar to Splatoon, only it uses soap instead of ink. So a lot of people are questioning why that one even happened. But, you know, I guess somebody somewhere decided it should be developed, decided there was room in the market for Splatoon with soap. I don't think it's doing particularly well, but they tried.
Yeah, real talk, if y'all have some products that you can play Splatoon on, that game is something else.
It absolutely is.
That game was crazy to try to play the first time. Like, you're up and down walls and just, like, painting streaks on everything. And I'm like, this game, it's so simple, but so damn hard, man.
Yeah, it's crazy. As they always say, easy to learn, but hard to master. And it definitely scratched. And as we talk about, we play probably between the two of us, God, I don't know, 50, 60 games a year, I'm sure. So when something comes out, and I can genuinely tell people that, hey, you haven't played anything like this recently, that's a very rare thing that happens. But 9 or 10 times a year there is something we're like, yeah, I really can't say I've ever played anything. And Splatoon was definitely one of those.
Yeah,
where I didn't know I needed a game like that until I played a game like that.
Yeah, and that's kind of been me lately. I'm more into something that's just different, even just for the experience, than I am to play something just like super popular, right? It's just like, oh, this is cool. I think years ago when, what's that game? It's like, I think it's called like Starve Together or whatever it is. It's like you play these two things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're out there like trying to kill these spiders and get firewood and whatever, and like that was so different. But I'm like, this is really cool, you know. And just played it for a while, and I was good with that, as having that as my gaming experience for a month or two, while everybody else was playing all these other like AAA titles, you know. Like, but I'm just goofing off with this other thing. So yeah, I'm more likely to do that kind of stuff. So
or just one like kind of a mode within a game that I was already playing. WWE 2K24 has essentially a roguelike mode in their My Faction. It's almost they kind of got Slay the Spire in your WWE, where you do runs and you see if you can beat, you know, Roman Reigns or whoever the boss character is, and you unlock things that will give you more armor or more health along the way. And of course, if you don't beat them, you start the whole process over and you don't get to keep all the stuff that you earned. So it's,
oh, that's wild. Yeah. I didn't even know they did that. That's cool.
Right. And the thing that I would have never thought to do in a wrestling game, but somebody did, thankfully, and said, hey, you got Slay the Spire by WWE and good looking out. I would have never thought to do that. And it's actually fun.
Well, there you go. People got some game recommendations now if they didn't have them before. But all right, let's get into what did we learn this week, because there are two very interesting things. Yours, I think, is going to kind of surprise people a little more than mine. So what do you got?
Yeah, you know how you go out driving, especially around a construction site or where they're building a bunch of new homes in a neighborhood, and you inevitably get a bunch of nails and other debris in your tire and end up with a flat tire? This happened to the guy in Atlanta, and he was tired of it. He's mad as heck, and he's not going to take it anymore. So he built this weird Batman-like vehicle contraption that actually has magnets attached to it. And what he sees, you know, a construction site or new home construction, just any place, there's going to be a lot of tires getting holes in them. He goes around with his magnet car and picks up all the metallic debris. The hero we didn't know we needed. I would have never, again, I'm as mad as anybody else that happened to my car, but it would have never occurred to me to do anything about it. Certainly not to create a vehicle that had a bunch of magnets and then go around sucking up all the metal.
Man, you know what? I bet you he gets a lot of scrap to recycle out of that, too.
That too.
Now that I'm thinking about it, he probably picks up pounds worth of stuff
easily.
If he just drives around for like 2-3 hours, I bet you he's like, every time he stops, he's probably scraping off probably, I bet there's probably 6 or 8 inches worth of stuff just driving around the city he gets every time. Like,
and man, if he has patented that idea, because that's the only thing that every city probably needs, at least 3 or 4 of those machines.
Well, you know, it kind of makes sense, though, right? Because we have street sweepers.
Exactly.
Like, we see those all over the place. Yeah. So, like, why not have something for picking up the debris?
Absolutely.
Like, it's weird. It's one of those ideas that you're just like, it seems really obvious.
Yeah, like, but you know, my knowledge, he's the only person I've heard of that's done anything like that.
That's pretty wild. Because really, until you mentioned the story, I'm kind of like, hadn't even thought about that being a thing. But the minute you say it, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, like, why not?
A lot of us are like, yeah, I've had nails in my tire countless times and been upset about it and had to go buy or, you know, fix a flat of tire. But it would have never occurred to me like, gee, how do I fix this problem? It's just somebody with a different mindset. We're like, hey, there must be a solution to this problem. I'm going to get to work on it.
Man, good on him, because that's probably saving a ton of people piles of money.
Right.
Seriously. Because, man, just getting a tire replaced, and depending on your car and the tire, $200 easy.
Easily.
You know, so, like, good on him. That's a good Samaritan invention.
Yeah, because, like, nobody asked him to do that. I would have never thought to do it.
Yeah, that's one. Man, just slow clap. You know what I mean? Like, for real. Like, that's what you should be doing.
He's a righteous dude.
Somebody find that guy, help him patent the idea, go make like an actual contraption for that you could sell to every city. Like, make a pile of money. Yeah, so mine is it was interesting, but also a little bit sad. But what I realized is after having going to so many events the last few months, one thing I have noticed that's a kind of consistent vibe, and it's weird because I've been to a lot of events, both down south and up north and around the country, even before this. But I've started trying to be more, I don't know, I guess the word, just more present and engaging more with people and just understanding who's attending a little bit more. I guess now that I'm becoming so much more entrenched in the content, I'm just like, okay, let me know the people that are connecting with this stuff a little better. And what I'm realizing is the events I've gone to, I would say in more conservative areas, but particularly down south, several of the attendees are treating that almost more like escapism. Like, this is the one time they can dress up, they can be themselves, they don't have to like care who's around, you know, whatever. Whereas the ones I've gone to in less conservative areas, and particularly, you know, up here in the state of Washington or whatever, have been more of like, okay, I'm going to show off this really cool thing I do, or I'm going to bring some friends and show them this really cool thing, or we're going to go to this convention for the first time with new people, or, you know, it's like, one is escapism, where one's almost more of a celebration. And I really didn't notice that until recently, and I'm kind of like, huh, it makes sense, but it's not something I ever really processed before. And I guess because I was just so busy working them, you know, like, it just wasn't really a thing of understanding, like, man, the culture around and outside the conventions affect people's kind of experience at the convention, even if those things don't come inside, right? They're kind of trying to get away from them, and it's a whole different world there. And I was like, wow, that's weird that I hadn't seen that before, but it makes sense. And I think in some ways, I kind of treated some of the early conventions I went to that way when I lived down south. But I don't think I consciously thought about it until I started kind of doing the retrospective and going like, huh, there probably was a little bit of something there in that. Whereas now, where things are a little more lax and whatever, and I'm going to these other things, like, I don't have that in the back of my brain like I did before. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know. I don't really know what the takeaway is from that, how we can fix that or make it better. But it's just something I thought I would point out to people, because it's definitely not something I even considered as a possibility. But again, it makes sense that that's a thing. And I will say, I think it stood out to me a little bit more, particularly with the Hunter Burton, because of, you know, it's about focusing on depression and suicide awareness, and, you know, and that's going to bring a certain vibe, and people are going to talk about stuff a little bit more. But thinking back about it, there was a little bit of that when I was at the event in Florida, you know, and that's something. And, you know, when I'd been to events in Texas previously, and when I was at one in Atlanta, and I was just like, oh, but that did feel different than, you know, when I was recently in Chicago, or like I said, up in Washington, or even in the stuff I've done in California. So it's like, wow, weird, but it makes sense. And I don't know if that's consistent. It could just be a personal view. It could just be how people open up and talk to me at certain events and not others. I don't know. But it's definitely something I'm going to be diving into a little bit more, or at least trying to pay more attention to when I go to things as the year goes on. Because I'm really curious if this is consistent, or if it's just a phase, or again, maybe just how certain people interacted with me. And it just may not be that way at the end of the year with different folks. But yeah, definitely something that, like I said, makes sense. I'm not going to say it's a certainty yet, because, you know, just kind of started diving in on it. But it's definitely something that caught my eye. But let's roll into some topics here, because we do have a couple of things worth noting. And Brian, you probably know as well as I do that with all these games we played, people always want something banned or unbanned. Like, that's constant. Yeah. And hell, you can probably vouch for this too. I don't know if there's been a single game we've played where people haven't had that mode of something being too good or not good enough, or y'all need to do something, or, you know, a deck wins two tournaments and people are like, that's it. It's the end of the world. We got to get rid of this thing, you know. But the interesting thing is, I think because I'm on the Commander Advisory Group, and people see me, and when they find it out, they immediately want to make a impassioned argument for a card that they just love that needs to be unbanned, or a card they really, really hate that needs to be banned. But one of the things I started thinking about, and again, this is just me talking, not the rest of the Commander Advisory Group talking. But between that, and especially Standard right now, because Standard has Shieldred, the card that everybody is annoyed by. Yeah. But even Shieldred only shows up in, I think, a couple, maybe two, of the top 7 or 8 decks right now. And I would even say, taking it a step further, right now in Standard, if you scroll through Twitter and search for all the RCQ posts people are making, people are qualifying with all kinds of crazy decks. Hell, I just saw one pop up the other day that was basically a new deck in the last week of the qualifying season. So people are, hell, the biggest tournament we've had this season was won by a 68 card crazy, you know, 30 land, whatever, just wild deck, right? So if that's what can win in standard, like, that's a healthy format, right? If I can go through on a weekend and see all these RCQ posts and see 15 or 20 different decks people qualified with, that's a healthy format. Why mess with it, right? Because here's the thing I think as gamers we don't think about is if things are good right now, what happens if we turn one of those knobs, right? Like we unban something or we ban something. What happens then if things are disrupted, right? And so people say, oh, well, if you unban this, it wouldn't even be that bad or whatever. It's like, okay, cool. If that's the case, what's the point of even unbanning it? We could just leave it there and everything's fine, right? If we unban it and nothing's going to change, then cool, let's just leave it. Now, if you can make an argument that, hey, if you unban this, it solves these other problems or makes these other kind of close to being banned cards less of an issue or something, okay, cool, then maybe there's an argument there. But to say, oh, we should just unban this and it won't hurt anything, it's like, well, everything's great right now. Then why do we want to mess with it? Hell, this weekend we had four, they had to cap the competitive commander event at 40. And now they're saying they might need to double it next year because so many people want to play. And the other half of the room was a bunch of people just playing regular commander. So if everybody's playing commander and happy, why should anything change? I mean, that's a real question when I ask people and they're just kind of like, yeah, I guess you have a point. It's just like, if everything's good, that's literally the whole point of the list being the way it is, right? Even in standard, we're doing great right now. Why change anything? But I don't, like, I guess, Brian, can you think of a time or a game that you've played where people didn't have that opinion? Because I feel like that's just constant across the board.
I mean, probably the only ones that did in their games that didn't really last past the first set where there was not even a time to ban anything.
That's sad.
Any game that's lasted more than a set or two, yeah, there's been something that has been cried. And sometimes the thing has been banned. Sometimes it hadn't.
That's a good point because it doesn't really feel like it takes long for people to start feeling like that. Like early on. Like I remember even playing Versus System. People wanted whatever the big like deal extra damage card because it happened to be rare, I think. And it was showing up in a bunch of things and people wanted that banned. You know, and I think as Magic players, it's easy to get an idea of like, why are people constantly talking about cards being banned or unbanned? But like, hell, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has a rotating ban list. That thing changes, I think, every 4 months or something. Like, so they're constantly banning and unbanning stuff. That's literally their mode. That's how they work. But I see Pokemon players complaining about stuff. You know, I've seen virtually every game have issues. Hell, even digital online games, people talk about cards being overpowered and needing to be nerfed or whatever, which Magic's tried to do that with Alchemy or whatever and have that whole thing. But yeah, it's just one of those things. I think when the environment's bad, sure, I get it. If something's too good or it's winning a bunch of tournaments, cool. I get why you call for it. But when things are good, you kind of just got to let things be good. There's always going to be something that's strong. Something that's going to be slightly more powerful than something else. But if it's not just busted, it ain't worth it for us to worry about. It's really not. Like, we risk doing more damage because we don't know what happens on those other sides. But things right now are pretty good in a lot of fronts. So, yeah, don't see a lot moving as far as that goes. Don't expect a lot of crazy bannings or unbannings in either Commander or Standard right now, I'd say, because they're both doing pretty well, pretty healthy at the moment. But another thing was brought up to me that I didn't know about, Brian, that you pointed out to me. So I'll let you take a little bit of lead on this one. But the Critical Role folks are working on their own version of D&D, and it's open for playtest right now, I guess.
Yeah, and it is called Daggerheart. And obviously, you know, the Critical Role folks have had just a great deal to do with D&D's popularity over the past. I mean, I think at one point they actually filled a football stadium, which just is mind-blowing to think about that many people wanting to watch anybody play D&D. So people are saying, hey, this might be the first time D&D has had anything that passes for legitimate competition in decades, possibly ever. When's the last time anything even rivaled D&D? That's before my time.
The closest thing I would say they had was probably Pathfinder, while third edition D&D was still a thing and Pathfinder became like the supplement as they moved D&D into fourth edition and a lot of people stayed playing Pathfinder. But and I mean, D&D was still around. Yeah. And D&D was still number one, even during that by a pretty significant margin. But Pathfinder was a real strong number two.
Yep. And then, of course, you combine that with, again, all the just the era of content creation. It's changed the way we consume. There are people, I'm sure, that at this point, people that watch Critical Role that have never played D&D in their lives. Never intend to. In the same way that, you know, I watch basketball all the time, but I don't personally play it. But it's becoming, it's a thing they consume just because they love the way these people play, which is just a mind-boggling thing to think about.
That is an interesting perspective, because I have had people specifically say that they watch my stuff even though they don't play Standard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're probably right. There's probably a big chunk of people that have become part of Critical Role's culture that don't ever plan to sit in a game session. They just probably enjoy them as entertainers in the storytelling.
So I wonder, and I don't know if they've said this anywhere in an interview, like, are they going to keep playing D&D? Or are they going to switch over and try to promote their own thing all the time? These are probably things they're thinking about, too, in terms of creating content.
Yeah, that would be a weird thing, right? Because some portion of their audience are probably for real D&D players. I mean, I know a lot of the people who watch them and they happen to be D&D players. So I'm sure that's a big chunk of their audience. So how would their audience feel if you're like, well, we have our own product and we're going to run that for the next month or whatever, right? The next 4 or 5 sessions or whatever it is, however frequently they're on TV and or the online.
Things, these are the things people got to think about when, hey, you know, you might be getting a lot of traffic on one game, but something else comes out. Or in this case, you've made something of your own. So you're obviously going to pour your heart and soul into it. You're going to promote it. And you're going to obviously hope it flies. But yeah, this is, I mean, you know, whatever happens, I'm excited to see how it turns out.
Yeah, interestingly enough, they have had some of their own supplements and like adventures and stuff that they've run. And those have gotten a little bit of popularity. I know they've also made some non-role-playing games because they have, I guess, like something else on their channel where they show different games they play. And they've made some like family style card games and stuff that they've promoted. So they probably have an idea of how well that stuff can sell just based on their brand, I imagine, at this point. So, I mean, I would assume they come up with some type of plan, you know, that works. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see, like, especially with D&D, I think going into sixth edition now, or whatever the latest thing is they're supposed to be doing, the like updated best of everything version of D&D. I don't know. It'd be an interesting time to get into the arena and want to compete. But
and 10 to 15 years ago, who would have thought being a D&D influencer was even a thing? You
know, just, oh, sure. Yeah.
Your content had given you say in what happens in the world of D&D. That's just...
But here's the thing to think about, right? Depending on when they launch, if the timing's right, you might have people that still like, well, I don't necessarily want to pick up the latest version of D&D. Let me try this Daggerheart thing. See what it's all about. You know what I mean? If they can hit the Kessel Run, you know, right? Like you can get in there, like maybe. You know,
and like we talked about, there are some people that just like to watch them play. So obviously they're going to watch whatever they do. They could be reading the phone book, and I'm sure they would figure out a way to make reading the phone book entertaining, because I mean, there's a lot of them are voice actors and creators and things that just, obviously they clearly know what they're doing. So
I think that's one of the things we've said about content creators as a whole too. It's like the real secret sauce is if you can get people invested in you,
yeah,
then you are bigger than the thing you're showing, right? You want to use the game, the hobby, whatever it is that you're part of to draw people in, but you want to make it eventually about you or your company or your troop or whatever it is, so people are invested in y'all and your operation more than just the product. And they seem to have done a good job of that so far. Now,
I've seen, and I'm sure you have too, seen so many creators where, hey, maybe they're, you know, maybe their audience loves Call of Duty and then they want to play something else and lose half of their audience.
So, oh, yeah.
Because obviously, whatever you're doing, you're going to get burned out if you're just doing the one thing all the time. Or like we talked about, let's say you do standard content, and you go through a spell where for you standard isn't fun, or whatever format it may be, just go through, because all the formats have time.
Yeah, they wax and wane. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're trying to crank out standard content, but you're in a spell where you just hate the way standard is going, that's got to be just a beating to do that every day.
Yeah. Fortunately, being Magic players, we can change up. Like, not everybody can do that.
And that's the thing, though. So if your audience only loves standard, can you change up?
Yeah, I think more so than other gamers can. I mean, you'll still lose some, but it won't bottom out like you would in if you try to go from, you know, Call of Duty to Mario Party, right? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not going to be the same. The one thing I will say, though, does come with that is that they do get Critical Role gets a lot of criticism. Yeah, right? That happens. If somebody has an opinion about a thing or they accidentally say the wrong thing, like, we've seen that multiple times where people are like, oh, these guys are like, how can y'all support this? Or how can they only have this thing? Or, you know, whatever. So, good, gotta take the good with the bad. You know, they're in a situation where they're probably making millions off their content, but you gotta take the other half of that too. But yeah, cool to know that it'd be interesting later this year, probably into next year, because it sounds like it'd be 2025 when that really, really gets rolling, to see what that does to the D&D or just the role-playing community as a whole. Because the other thing is, does that draw people away from secondary or tertiary games of like Pathfinder or whatever? Right? That could be a bigger problem for them. Because like D&D has room to lose a few people. I don't know if you're one of these smaller games, if you can afford to lose your audience to somebody like their Critical Role product, right? That's going to be a bigger issue, I think. But all that being said, let's wrap stuff up with the dinner table. And this kind of does a good call back to the top of the show here, where we talked about there being so many new faces coming into the game. And we've talked before about, you know, making your store more welcoming, more inclusive, whatever. But it might be even more imperative in 2024 with this whole run of new faces. People that have never, in some cases, ever been to game stores until recently, and how they're even being introduced to the game, because some of them are getting in because they're going to conventions or they're following certain content creators or whatever, more so than just, I learned from my cousin, brother, sister, whoever, and now I'm a player, right? So I guess if you were, I don't know, you do have kids, so this is kind of an interesting perspective. So like, let's say you were going to take your daughter into a game store for the first time. What would you think would be something that game stores would have to help make it more welcoming or inviting for somebody like her?
I mean, I guess just definitely diversity of product, you know, where it's like, if it's a comic book store, it's not all, I'm sure the majority of it is going to be, hey, superheroes punch people in the face, but that's not everything. You do have some other types of product there. Things, especially like you've, things that have female characters, you know, front facing, or again, just things. I know it's the superhero comics are what sell everything, but there are, you know, other types. Same thing with games, you know, where it's not just the top three or four that are selling everything.
Yeah, I think for me, there's really two things that I think game stores have always missed on, and I think the first is, well, really a combination of either diversity of staff ensemble, where you're talking even having more women working or people of color, whatever, you know, some LGBT community members, but also a staff that's representative of your community, right? Because there are times you go into a game store in Texas, you know, because using that as an example, because that's where I grew up, but like you're in a place that's 70% Hispanic, but there's no Hispanic folks working at the store and there's five employees. And it's like, is that the best decision? You know what I mean? Like at least 70% of the people theoretically that walk into your store, hell, let's say maybe because of culture, it's really only 50% of your customers or whatever.
Yeah. But still a significant amount.
Yeah. Like it would make sense to have some people like them on your staff. Partially, some of them might come in with their parents, grandparents have a little bit of a language barrier. There's a higher percentage chance you have customers or employees that could communicate with those customers if they're from those cultures or whatever, right? That would make, or wherever you are in the country. If you're up here, you probably want some Asian representation because there's a large Asian community up here. But whatever it happens to be, right? I think that's a big deal. The other is making sure that you're accommodating to all types of customers, not just your male customers. Because I think it's very easy to fall into the trap of, oh, well, most of my customers are guys, so let's just, you know, make sure we take care of all them or whatever. But the reality is, you may not be getting some of those other customers because you've not done things to make yourself welcoming to those other customers. And that could be anything like, one, just keep your place clean, you know, whatever. Hell, I don't know if I ever told you this story, because I tried to visit stores everywhere I've been in the country. I've probably visited, no joke, probably somewhere between, well, probably getting close to 300 different stores around the country. And even some of the, there was one I visited up here when we first moved here. My woman went, like, we stopped. I'm going to be talking to the owners. We walked in because she needs to go to the bathroom. So I'm like, yeah, we can go stop at this next one, whatever. She literally went in, went to the bathroom, came right out, was like, nah, I'm going to hold it. And I'm like, damn, yeah. How bad was that restroom? Like, so immediately, of course, I had to go look, and it was a disaster. Right. But I'm like, bruh, dude, like, when a woman leaves your bathroom, it's like, I ain't even touching that. Like,
that's come unsafe on, man. For your male customers, too. I hope this was pre-COVID.
Oh, it definitely was pre-COVID. This was 2018. Not that that's
acceptable then either, but that's just.
Actually, it might have been 2017. It was 2017 or 2018. It was a while ago.
I don't care. I mean, I'm a dude. I like for the bathroom to be clean.
Oh, same. Just, same. You know? But also, like, you know, have a couple of feminine products in there. You know, maybe have an air freshener available or one that's just running or whatever to keep it smelling not rank, you know? Hell, I told you before, we kept some roll-on deodorant available just in case somebody was a little ripe. I kind of nudge them and be like, hey, man, and like kind of covertly pass it to them like, hey, you may want to go take care of that or whatever, right? Just little things. And to be honest, most of them they did that too were super appreciative because, right. You know, it got hot in Texas and they were working and they just didn't realize it or whatever. They go take care of it. They're good. One or two, they'd get a little defensive. And I'm like, dude, I'm trying not to make a scene. Are you sure you want to do this? Right, just I'm being nice. Just go take care of it.
The longer this conversation goes, the more attention.
Exactly
the problem.
So, you know, just little and understanding that the magic community has gotten to the point that it's almost come full circle, being older, but also bringing in younger, because now a lot of people are coming with their 10, 12, 13 year olds. You know, because their parents played forever ago, and now they're digging through cards, and now they're playing Commander together, or whatever the case is. So you need to be welcoming to those families or to that older crowd, right? They don't want to come into a place that's super crowded, poorly lit, whatever. Like, they have choices now. We have game stores literally everywhere. Like, the bar is much higher. If
and
you're place, that...
And, you know, you play, even major chains like Barnes & Noble will run stuff for games like Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
Canada that they think is going to have huge family-friendly crossover.
So they don't have a reason to go to you if you're just a dingy hole ball anymore.
At the same time, hole in the wall.
Yep, it ain't a thing no more. Like, you can be small and be really good. We have some stores up here that are maybe 1,500 square feet, something like that. Just a nice store. It's got some place to play. It's got good product. The employee, it's well lit. So you don't have to be a big, crazy store, right? You just have to be good at what you're doing. And I think that's the difference now than it was even 6-7 years ago. People just expect more out of their entertainment. So, yeah. And if you do it right, they're willing to spend a lot of time and money with you. That's the other thing.
Especially when I was younger, good Lord, there was my local comic shop. I spent probably far more time there than I did at my own house. It was right across the street from my job at the time. So I would get off work and rather than go home, we'd go across the street to the comic shop and hang out for a while before going home.
True. But those same stores that I visited, real talk, I wouldn't want to hang out at them today. Like, I mean, just being real. Like, they were cool when I was 15, 16. They ain't cool now. Like, I'm going somewhere else. Like, I just want to make sure my leisure time is more pleasurable. That's all there is to it, you know? But all right, Brian, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on the social media machines?
I am Brian Sonic on Twitter, Instagram, and the YouTube.
And you can find me everywhere at Power Dragon, PowerDragon. And man, there's going to be all kinds of stuff coming up with Thunder Junction. You'll probably catch me in a cowboy hat and some boots soon, so keep an eye out for that. But wherever you are watching or listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. Please remember to take care of yourselves and your family. Remember to be awesome, and most importantly, be awesome to each other.
If you'd like to further support Color of Magic, you can find us at our website at colorofmtg.com. We also have a Patreon if you'd like to donate, under patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook under Color of Magic. And if you want to follow us along at Twitter, you can find us there at colorofmtg. And as always, please share the podcast around to your friends, your network, people you think might enjoy it, because every little bit helps as we're trying to increase our user base.